It's episode number 25 of Raw Health Radio, and today we're going a little bit off the beaten track, and we're talking about what we can learn from children with ADD. Now, I've got Katie Maycock on the line. She is the founder of ADD Freedom. She's got a degree in nutrition and psychology from Melbourne's La Trobe University, and she's got some interesting thoughts to share with us. This show was meant to be about children with ADD, but I read Katie's book, ADD Freedom for Children, and I thought, you know what? This is something that really applies to everyone, and ADD is a bit of a label that's probably misunderstood, which we're going to get into in a second, but I thought there's so much we can learn from this condition and what it actually means for brain health that we really got to make this a bit broader than just talking about children. So Katie, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So you've got an interesting story around ADD. Do you want to share that with my listeners?
Yeah, sure. So I guess with my ADD, I've actually got what you classify as ADHD, so the hyperactivity side. I guess my story is, when I was in school, I was pretty naughty, but I wasn't over the top naughty. Like, I wasn't completely unruly, but I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't focus. I didn't do my coursework. I was more interested in talking to my friends. And literally a teacher could be talking to me and I could glaze over and be thinking, thinking about something else and could be a million miles away. My mum constantly get called into school saying, you've got to get Katie checked for ADD or ADHD and things like that. So my mum did take me to the doctors and they said, yep, she's got ADHD. My mum's response was, I don't believe that's a real thing. I think she's drinking too much red cordial and eating the wrong food. So I think it's more of a food side. So mum never really let it get to me. So she
I agree
never
with
really,
your mum, by the way.
Yeah. I now doing my course, I think there's a bit of part and parcel of nutrition and there's actually a problem there. But, mum just felt that I was having, like I said, too much red cordial and too much sugar. So I guess as school went on, I still struggled. And I guess... I didn't really embrace what ADHD and the positives of it, because I always thought, I'm not smart, I'm not going to be like the other kids, I can't do this, I can't do that. Because when you've got ADHD, you always get told what you can't do and how you can't focus. I decided as an adult to take a bit of a different view on it. I was like, well, you know what, there are actually some really positive things. I can do a lot of different tasks all at once and I can complete them. I can hyper-focus on certain areas. That's sort of my story. And so I decided to write a book instead of actually showing parents and people what the negatives are and how to manage it, actually focus on the positives that you can actually have with ADHD and sort of focusing on other ways other than taking medication, because I was never medicated and I'm so grateful that my mum never medicated me. And I would still now, as an adult, never get myself medicated.
So let's talk about what ADD or ADHD actually is, because you have an interesting insight in your book. You say it's not necessarily a problem or something that's wrong with someone that needs to be treated. Mm. It's more just a word that doctors have created to categorize a certain people who don't fit into a mold of people that do well in school. What are your thoughts around that?
I actually agree with that. So I think that, we look at, to be diagnosed with anything, you have to be different from the norm. So there has to be a standard of what they classify as normal. And I guess it's really hard with either mental illness or even, because ADHD is classified as a form of mental or social illness. So typically what they say is ADD and ADHD is attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And the worst thing is it's an opinion of somebody labeling you, saying that you've got something. So they have there might be 11 different things that they have to read from a list of symptoms, and you've got to have six of them, just six, and you have to demonstrate them for 6 months. And some of them are like, you can't focus, you can't concentrate, you're fidgety, you're those types of things. When does it, in my mind, I sort of think, when does it get to a point when that is actually a problem? Like, I know that it can be a problem within school, but, I sort of feel like school was made such a long time ago, and it was made in the industrial era, to help people, to pretty much create workers. So to pretty much make people conform. So from my side, I think it's just a labeling tactic by doctors, because it's like, well, these kids don't fit into the norm, so let's label it with something, or even adults as well.
So let's get into a little bit more specific of the characteristics of people who doctors say have ADD. In your book, you say some of the symptoms of ADD include not paying attention to detail, making careless mistakes, failing to pay attention or keep on task, avoiding tasks that involve effort, being distractful or forgetful, losing track of tasks that need to get completed. Now, I work with people on a one-on-one basis, and I'm sure you do as well, and just by fixing up people's nutrition and diet and whatnot, we can make these things go away. What would you say that this thing that people label as ADD actually is?
I personally think that I think there's a definitely part and parcel with nutrition. I know for myself, if I eat food that I've got preservatives in it, that have a lot of wheat in it, that have dairy, that have sugar, that have sulfites, that have preservatives, I'm done. Like, I can't concentrate. I can't sleep. I get anxiety. I can't finish tasks. I can't think properly. So, you know, and you look at the way how ADHD has grown. It's grown significantly in the last 50 years, and you think, what the hell else has changed in society? And it's our diet, it's our nutrition, it's our it's what we've been feeding ourselves and our kids. And I sort of do think that, you know, the growing rates of ADHD can really come down to the fact that it is based upon nutrition and what we are feeding our kids, and the fact that we're not getting enough exercise and we're not getting enough fresh air. And I think another part and parcel is kids are getting told what they have to do rather than thinking about what they want to do as well. So I think that there is also a factor in, you know, if you're getting made to do something you don't want to do, you're not going to focus on it. You're not going to want to do it. You're going to be thinking about something else all the time as well. So I think there's a lot of different facets in it, but nutrition is a huge one. I've noticed myself, and you know, with clients that I do have, that when you just change a couple of certain things, it makes the world of difference. The other thing that you've got to look at is a lot of people that do have ADHD, and this is what something I found incredibly interesting, is a lot of people have food sensitivities and allergies that is actually creating and linking that to ADHD as well.
Mm. So let's talk about the learning side of things, because people tend to classify ADD as you can't focus on this particular task that you've been given to do. And that generally happens in schools. Now, you and I were talking off air about, I was talking off air about how if you came and asked some of my high school teachers, does David have ADD? Some of them would have said, yeah, for sure. He's definitely got it. Some of them would have said, no, he's completely fine. My maths teacher would have said, no way in the world. Because I loved maths and I was all right at it. And if you ask my English teacher, didn't like him very much. He would have said, yeah, definitely David's got something going on. But everyone remembers, you know, year 12 English and reading To Kill a Mockingbird and all those old books that no one really cares about anymore. And of course, that's important stuff, but it just had no interest to me and I didn't want to pay attention to it. Now, in your book, you say hyperfocus is where a person with ADD or ADHD can get fixated on a specific task and sit there for hours. Activities like painting, drawing, sculpting, cooking, writing, and so on are these sorts of things. For you, it's playing outside. You say you can spend hours researching nutrition, sit down and watch 3 or 4 documentaries in a row about nutrition and not get bored. However, you can't sit through movies.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I guess you've got to look at the hyper-focusing. I mean, I guess with ADD and ADHD, there's a fine line between kids that, you know, most kids, if they don't like something, they're not going to do it. And adults, if you don't like it, you're not going to do it. But I guess it takes it to the extreme. Like you said, like certain teachers of yours would say that you were an angel and that you did really well because you loved maths and things like that. I had the same issue, but for me, I would completely turn off, and most people do if they have ADHD, will completely turn off in classes that don't interest them. You know, when you're at school and when you're out, you know, I talk about school because I just remember when I was school and these books are for kids. I remember if I didn't like a subject or I didn't understand the subject, I just did not find it interesting at all. I'd just look outside. I literally was just that kid that was always staring outside the window. However, when it came to my health subjects, my psychology subjects, all those types of things, I gave it 110%. So I literally went from one subject where I was getting D's to getting A pluses. So it clearly wasn't that a fact I couldn't learn. And that's the biggest thing, that a lot of parents think that their kids can't learn and they focus on they can't learn like the other kids. For me, it was just whatever I really liked to do, I focused on. And I was just really I feel that I was really fortunate enough to have my mum, who really just said, just do what you want to do, focus on what you're passionate in, and you'll make it work. So I guess, you know, I had that support network there, and I was always told you can do whatever you want to do in a way. But I feel like school kind of does let those kids down. If you're not interested in anything at school, you're not going to do well, and it does damage the psyche of some kids, because, you know, you're not the smart kid, you're getting bad grades. And I guess when you're in, like, you know, you're in your year 11, 12 years, when you're finishing off your schooling, if you're not getting really good grades, I found this in my school, that a lot of the teachers wouldn't pay that much attention to you. It's sort of like you did get left behind in a way. So I guess hyper-focusing for me was awesome, because, I, you know, for me now, I can still sit down and, like, research nutrition for 12 hours. But when it comes down to watching a TV show, I've got to be fiddling something in my hands. I've got to be looking at my phone. I've got to be talking to somebody or reading a book at the same time. Like, I've got to be doing multiple things at once, because it doesn't entertain me. It's not enough stimulus for my brain to be able to compute what's going on, because I'm bored. And you'll find that when kids are bored, they get anxious. So, and well, I get anxious when I'm bored still as an adult, because you know, with the ADD. So, yeah.
I'm going to read you a little quote now from a book that I was reading on the day that you emailed me about this and sent me a book called The One Thing, The Surprisingly Simple Truth Behind Extraordinary Results, which is written by a guy called Gary Keller. Now, in his book, he talks about selected discipline, and the chapter is called Selected Discipline Works Swimmingly. And he says, Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps is a case study of selected discipline. When he was diagnosed with ADHD as a child, his kindergarten teacher told his mother, Michael can't sit still, Michael can't be quiet, he's not gifted, Michael will never be able to focus on anything or achieve anything. And then he goes on to say, if Michael Phelps were a country, he'd be ranked 12th in the world over the last three Olympics. How did this happen? How did the boy who could never be able to focus on anything achieve so much? He became a person of selected discipline. Michael Phelps channeled all his energy into one discipline that he enjoyed that developed into one habit, which was swimming daily. So how do you think that people who are listening to this right now can learn from that, or from children who really can focus well on the things that they enjoy and begin to direct their life around that? Because if you presumably had been told, well, your father was an engineer and his father was as well, and you need to go and start doing engineering, presumably that wouldn't have worked for you.
No,
how can people work around that?
I guess if you're an adult, it's a little bit easier. So I think you would, when you grow up, you do realize what you like and what you don't like. The hardest thing to get past is when you're a child and you get diagnosed with ADHD, it's all about what you cannot do. It's not what about you can do. And that, I think that is, that's the hardest thing when you have ADHD. And I think is, you know, going back to, you know, making sure we don't label our kids and things like that, you know, parents have to be really careful in whether they tell their kids if they have ADHD or not. Kids will, you know, as a child, you usually gravitate to one thing that you really like. Like for me, I loved cooking. I loved everything to do with food. And then I sort of turned into nutrition as I got older and I really focused on that. But I think it's a really big, you know, if you're a parent thinking about your kid and kids and with ADHD or ADD, just, you know, get them to try different hobbies and see what they gravitate towards. As adults, I think that if you're doing a lot of things that you don't like, you're going to not be a very happy person. So do something that you do like. And I think that, you know, you can, if you're doing something that you do like, you're going to continue doing it and you can potentially focus all your energy on that and become a master of that. I guess the side to Michael Phelps was he was hyper-focusing on swimming. He loved it. He made that his world. I've made nutrition my world. So, you know, you've got to look at it, what you really like, and focus on it. For you, you like math, so you might particularly like to do math equations or Sudoku or something on the weekend.
Yeah.
But you've always got to make sure that you're doing that one thing and focusing on that, and don't focus on what you can't do. Focus on what you can and what you like.
Mm. Agreed. Let's talk about the food side of things, because I think this is where the carryover between children and adults is most obvious. I mean, basically ADD is talking about the way that you learn and what you like to learn about, but also brain function, as you were talking about earlier. So what sort of things can people eliminate from their diet that will improve brain function, whether it's a child who's at school trying to focus on their work, or it's an adult who's trying to get through that kind of brain fog, I'm not really paying attention, I'm not fully present at work?
I know I focus on ADHD, but I do focus on, you know, I am a nutritionist, I do focus on other areas. The two biggest foods that I find are that make ADHD a bit worse, or even make brain fog the worst, like that little bit worse, are things. Wheat is the biggest one I've seen, because wheat is just one of those things that a lot of people are intolerant to, a lot of people are allergic to, for very various reasons. So you can look at the way it's been grown, the way we've chemically modified it, the fact that it's been cross-pollinated with other forms of wheat, so our body doesn't recognize it. So some people have extreme reactions, like, you know, they get bloated, they get sick, they get upset stomachs. Other people will just get sore joints and brain fog. So you'll find that when you take those people off wheat and change it to, you know, having a bit more of, like, you know, fruits and vegetables and things like that, and getting energy from those types of foods, as well as rice and sweet potato and things like that, that's a big one. And dairy is another huge thing. Like I mentioned before, ADHD has been linked to food sensitivities, intolerances, and allergies. So if you're taking out the two biggest instigators, which is wheat and dairy, you're usually, you know, I find that people do so well. Even if you don't have ADHD, even if you just get, you know, like you said, you get the brain fogs around the 3 o'clock mark, you can't focus, you're getting a bit tired. Usually it's because you've had a really high carbohydrate meal for lunchtime and you're just feeling a little bit snoozy because, you know, you've got the, you've, you know, when you eat wheat, it increases your blood sugar levels and you've got the insulin coming in and then you get the crash. So it's just trying to manage that crashing. So always making sure that your blood sugar levels are balanced by and wheat is the biggest instigator of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So all those negative things that we usually associate with ADD or ADHD, they usually go away in people who don't even have this condition, or people notice that they might not have been paying attention to the fact that, oh, my ability to concentrate is reduced in the afternoon. But once we work in these lifestyle things, and getting off gluten is such a huge thing as well, people say, I can concentrate so much better. I don't get hungry. I can just stay on task all afternoon and without feeling like my brain's starting to wander. So that was when I read your book, and that was the point where I thought, you know what, this is just something that so many people need to learn from, because a conversation about ADD, like, yeah, it's about the way that you learn and what you like to learn about, but it's also about brain function.
Yeah. And I think, I guess, if the way as well, if you look at wheat and how, if you eat it and it's damaging your stomach, glutamine is a huge factor in brain function as well. I don't know if you know much about glutamine, but if we aren't digesting food very well, if we're eating wheat and we don't tolerate it very well, and our stomach has to work that little bit harder to digest it, all our glutamine is getting focused on our stomach, and we don't have enough of getting going to the brain, which actually helps release serotonin. So if we are eating foods like wheat that are, that, you know, like, you can be having some form of intolerance to or an allergic reaction to, it is going to completely change the way you concentrate, the way you focus. You know, a lot of people with ADHD have anxiety. So when you take out the gluten and you start putting some glutamine in, or you're making sure that the glutamine can be utilized really well, it's amazing what can actually, how people actually feel and how they can transform. So yeah.
Earlier, before we started this show, you were talking about blood sugar levels. Now, most people don't know this, and if you don't believe me on this, then that's what Google's for. But brown bread, white bread, basically all kinds of wheaty grains are higher in GI than things like Coke, white table sugar, soft drinks, and people just don't know this. We've been told for so long, bread's a healthy food, whole grains, they're the best thing, and they're good for your bowel and all that sort of carry on. But if you're a diabetic, you're better off drinking Coke than you are eating bread, which is crazy. So how does blood sugar impact someone's ability to function on a cognitive level, and how can we work around that?
So I guess if you think about it as your body can only handle a certain amount of sugar at one time, if you're overloading your body with sugar, you're going to have a spike in glucose in your blood sugar levels. So wheat always gets broken down and gets released as glucose. So even though it's a whole grain, whatever, it still gets broken down. It still turns into glucose, and it's the end molecule. It's just Coke will get in there a bit quicker. What happens is that will spike your energy levels and your blood sugar levels. So you'll feel amazing for the first half an hour. You'll feel like on par. You'll be like, you know, you'll be able to concentrate. You'll be going, 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 going. And then what happens is our pancreas will release insulin. So insulin will then absorb the glucose, take it into the cell, and be stored in the body, either use it as an energy or be stored as a body fat. Once that happens, and once all that glucose is out of our blood, our blood sugar levels then drop, and then we're craving sugar again, for one. But the other thing is, we're just feeling really tired, we're feeling really foggy, we might get a headache, you know, we might not, you know, we might feel a bit nauseous, those types of things as well. And people just never link that back to weight. They just think they might be hungry again, or they're just tired, they had a bad night's sleep. So that's how it really impacts our cognitive ability. And if you think about it, our brain can only use glucose as an energy source. So if we've put a huge amount of glucose in our body, and then that's why we get that really big focus, but once it gets taken away, our brain's just going, I need more energy, like, what's going on? So it will react in a certain way that will make us want to have more sugar as well. So it's kind of a vicious cycle in a way. So, yeah.
Yeah. So all around Australia and probably all over the world, people are probably sitting down right now, it's lunchtime as we're recording this, and having their healthy wrap, or, you know, a healthy sandwich, a salad sandwich with a bit of chicken or something like that for lunch, which, as we now know, is not the best thing they can be having. And what would you like to see people eating instead?
So for me, I personally like the idea of having some form of protein with a vegetable. And around this time, it is good to have some form of a high-energy carbohydrate, so like sweet potato or rice. I'm a big fan of like basmati or brown rice, because they are, like, they do release the sugar into the blood a little bit slower. I like to put a protein with it, because it actually helps slow the release of the sugars into the blood, so it'll keep you going for a little bit longer. And having a lot of vegetables. I think vegetables are, you know, we always say you have to get your certain serving of vegetables a day. So many people have no idea how much that really is. You know, a cup of spinach would be a serving of vegetables and things like that. So making sure you are eating a lot of vegetables, and, you know, I think that having more veggies and having a little bit of rice and a little bit of protein is the best thing to have for lunch in the afternoon. It sounds really boring, but you can make them interesting as well. So
I'm not a huge subscriber of paleo. They say some things that I kind of think, but paleo do really good recipes. So if you only take one thing from paleo, go and just look at that. And their desserts are amazing as well. Paleo desserts are the best. Everyone should go out and have a look at those. So let's talk about, you've got a chapter in your book about the psychology of changing your diet plan. Yep. Do you want to share some of the information around that?
I think that changing, you know, food from, you know, I used to work in a gym as a nutritionist, and getting people to change their diet can be really quite hard. Yep. It's an emotional thing. So people actually link food to an emotional reaction, you know, as an emotion. It elicits some form of emotion. So if you can try and eliminate that, that's great, but we're human beings, we can't really do that. I think when you're changing your diet, you've got to take baby steps. Like, unless you're the kind of person that's, I've got to do all in and that's what I've got to do. But most people that do, I'm going to do all in, I'm going to cut all the bad food out, I'm going to eat really clean, I'm going to really do this and try and do it, they probably get to the 2-week mark and they just fall off. So they're at that 1-week mark. If they did it one for one more week, they've broken that bad habit, but they can't get past it. So my biggest thing is, especially if, as adults, kids it's a little bit easier, but adults it's actually quite hard, because we're used to this. We've created these habits. We want to keep eating them. It's actually breaking one bad habit at a time. So for me, I always say, you know, try and if it's, I think wheat should be one of the first things to be taken out, or even eat regularly. That's Agreed. Another big thing that you need to do. One of those two. You choose those things, you master that, and then you go to the next goal that you want to do. And you sort of work towards where you need to be, and you set yourself a really rigid goal, like a really rigid structure to reach your goal. So, and I think, you know, the worst thing is, I think wheat's quite addictive, sugar's addictive. But usually when you look at wheat, there's sugar in wheat as well. So there's two addictive products in the same thing. So trying to get rid of that and actually realizing and set yourself up realizing you are going to have withdrawal symptoms. You are going to feel really sick. You are going to have headaches. You are going to feel really tired. But I'll be just aware that that's only going to last, you know, 4 days, 4 to 7 days is what they say. I've seen it last for anywhere as, you know, for 2 days up to 7. So depending how long you've been on them. I just think it's slow and steady wins the race. I don't think you should do it all overnight.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've never, and you're a practicing nutritionist, so this will have more weight coming from you, I've never told someone to stop eating gluten and not have them feel better, or at least when they reintroduce gluten, and I usually say stop eating gluten for 3 weeks, I've never had someone come back and say, you know what, I started eating gluten again and everything was totally fine. Everyone comes back with negative symptoms once mm-hmm. they take it out mm-hmm. and they let their body heal, and then they bring it back in, all mm-hmm. kinds of chaos happens. Yeah. Have you ever had anyone stop eating gluten and not feel better?
In the 8 years that I've been a nutritionist and practicing and telling people not to eat weight, I have never had anyone come back to me and say, you know what, I started eating weight again and I feel amazing. I've never had that happen. I've always had people going, oh, I cut out weight for like, you know, the last 4 weeks and now I had like a piece of bread and now I just feel really sick. So, yeah, I've never really, really ever had that at all, no. So, yeah.
And I suppose the only report card that we're really getting is from our clients. I mean, I was reading this morning about, and I'm going to do a blog on this because it really annoys me, but people saying, oh, these celebrity chefs don't really know what they're talking about. And whole grains are really good for your bowel. And are you out there in the real world actually working with people, you know, faceless name on a computer who researches the benefits of weight on bowel health? Like, I don't understand it. It's crazy.
Yeah. To be fair, weight is really addictive. So when you tell somebody to, and especially if you've got an allergy to a food, you'll find that when you tell people to take it out, they get angry at you. They actually start defending it. And then you just sit there and go, why are you defending it? Why does it matter? Why can't you just not eat weight for 4 weeks? And you just challenge them back. I think, you know, celebrity chefs kind of know what's going on. They've got a team of researchers as well. But, I mean, you can always go and Google research for weight and against weight. You know, people say that whole grains are so great for your bowels, but I've read it's probably the worst thing is it just pretty much tears it apart and causes inflammation in the gut.
Yep.
And once you have inflammation in the gut, you're more likely to have leaky gut syndrome, which then comes with a whole array of other issues, you know. Yep. Sore joints, you're going to get like autoimmune like responses.
Arthritis.
You're going to get what they call rheumatoid arthritis.
Which I don't really believe in personally. I mean, it's a thing, but it's like...
A lot of it comes down to food and what we put into our bodies rather than actually, you know, you're born with it.
Yeah, kind of thing. Absolutely agree. So another huge thing that I do for my clients... I mean, I like to work from what's going to give them the most bang for their buck and get them on board with this nutrition plan and then work my way down is organic food. How can that make a difference to someone's brain health?
I guess with organic food, I think everyone should be... To be fair, I don't even think it should be organic. It's like labeled as something that's special or different. It should just be what we're eating. You got to focus on what they're actually putting in our foods. You know, they're putting all these... preservatives in it. They're putting spray it with herbicides, pesticides, and things like that. They're starting to prove that when these things cross the blood-brain barrier, they're actually causing damage. And the fact that it can like go over the blood-brain barrier is insane.
Damage to the brain, you mean?
It's causing damage to your brain. So like that's how people are saying like ADHD is also rising because of the pesticides and herbicides and food. It can cause neurological issues as well, so all the pesticides and herbicides and things like that. So I think organic is a way forward, and if you can try and grow your own stuff and making sure the soil's really good, that's also really important as well. I'm completely on board with organic.
You'll be more educated about this than me, but I've heard and I've read from people who I know and trust that the mechanism that the body protects things in the digestive system coming into the body is almost exactly the same mechanism as the blood-brain barrier, and it uses the same building blocks. And if you break down the protective layer between what's inside your digestive tract and your bloodstream, then you have to repair from that, and then your body doesn't have enough left over to repair from your blood-brain barrier. Is that true?
I haven't done heaps and heaps of research on that, but yeah, it is true. And the worst thing is, if you're thinking about when you break down, you know, the lining of your stomach, which is what you're pretty much essentially saying, you're breaking that down and the mucous membranes around your stomach that are going to help digestion and things like that. Once that's broken down and you're leaking things out into your bloodstream, you're having an immune reaction, and that's going to wear your body down. So your body can't repair because it's so tired from constantly fighting what they think is foreign particles, which is pretty much the food that you're eating, because you're breaking down the whole lining of your stomach and the membranes and things like that. Of course, it's going to be hard for your body to repair. If your body's tired, and you know, you got to look at it like if you cut your skin and you keep cutting it open and open and open, it's just never going to heal. So if you're going to keep eating the same food, it's never going to be able to heal.
So what about exercise, sleep, and a healthy lifestyle routine for brain function then? How do you see that as being important?
I think that's really, really important. I think that you can't have one with the other. Like, you've got to have a healthy diet to be able to do the exercise and to sleep. I know people that will come to me going, I don't sleep. And most of the time I can link it, I'll go, what are you eating? And I can link it right back to what they're eating. And because they're not eating properly and they're not sleeping properly, they can't exercise. Or, you know, if they're not eating properly, if they're not exercising, everything else is out of whack. They don't want to eat healthy. They're too tired and all those types of things. I think you need to have that down pat. You need to have a healthy diet. You need to have a healthy exercise regime. And you need to have a healthy lifestyle, you know. When we're talking about healthy lifestyles, it doesn't just come down to food. It comes down to making sure that you are doing things that you really enjoy doing. So you are having that break. You are going for walks. You are spending quality time with friends and family and making sure that you are taking care of yourself rather than, you know, constantly working, constantly stressing. I mean, stress is a huge issue as well. That's, you know, another thing, that's another topic. But yeah, you need to have all of them in balance.
What would you say would be more important and people should focus on first? Making sure that you're actually doing things in your life that you enjoy and that interest you, or starting to work on the lifestyle side of things?
I think you need to start doing what you enjoy more, because the more that you do, the things that you do that you enjoy more is going to make you feel more positive about making positive changes in your life. Think about it. If you're going to start a diet but you're miserable, changing your diet is going to be the hardest thing to do, and getting that sorted is going to be really, really difficult because you're not doing anything you enjoy. And a lot of the time people, if they're not enjoying things, they turn to food as a comfort. So my biggest thing is, yeah, go and do stuff that you enjoy. Like, you know, find something that you like doing on the weekend or on the weeknights and just focus on that.
Agreed. So have you got any closing messages or any closing comments that you would like to leave people with? If they've got a child who has ADD or ADHD, or if they feel like they might have some of those negative characteristics that people call ADD going on in their life?
Yeah, I think my biggest message to parents with kids with ADHD, or people, or even adults that think they have ADHD or, you know, a swaying towards that, don't focus on the negatives. Like, there are so many positives to do with ADHD, like the hyper-focusing, like the fact that some of the most famous people in the world have actually ADHD, the most successful people in the world have ADHD. It does not mean that you can't
learn. Richard Branson was another one that you mentioned in your book.
Yeah, Richard Branson not only had ADHD, he has dyslexia as well. And he left school when he was 15. Yeah.
Right.
So you've got to, you know, you don't be so hard on yourself if your kid isn't getting good grades, if you're not getting good grades, or you're not doing those types of things, find something that you enjoy doing, put all your energy into that, and then, you know, start working towards that. Don't focus on the negatives. That's my biggest, biggest message, is stop focusing on the other things that you can't do, focus on the things that you can.
Maybe it just means that you shouldn't be studying old Shakespeare books for a living, right?
Yeah, I remember when I was at school, I had to do a statistics class. I remember going to every lecture, but I could not tell you what any of those lectures were about because I was not interested in statistics at all. So
Yeah. I remember I had to do that at university as well.
It's not fun.
Not a good time. So for everyone out there who's listening and you want to learn more from Katie, you can find her at addfreedom.com. She's got 3 books. She's got ADD Freedom for Kids, ADD Freedom for Teenagers, and ADD Freedom for Adults as well, which you can get on Amazon.com. And you've got a Facebook page as well, don't you?
I do, yeah. So that's just ADD Freedom for Kids. So if you look that up, it's there. Yeah.
You'll find Katie. And go and have a look at her blog as well, because there's all kinds of stuff on there about increasing memory and getting your brain to work better and whatnot as well. It's very insightful. I was on there this morning and I quite liked what you had to share.
Thank you.
It's rare that I'd speak to a nutritionist, actually, who's come from an Australian university who actually gets this kind of good information out there. Like, I studied nutrition at university and I dropped out because I hated it. I could not stand it. It was, everyone needs to eat this particular way. Grains are good for you. And if you don't eat this way, then you're an idiot, basically. And I couldn't stand it.
The thing is with nutrition subjects, nutrition's such a broad area, you've got to go specialize in an area. So you've got to find what you really like. So you're just being, one diet does not fit all.
That's what they tried to teach me. I don't know. I mean, I bet your university was different.
No, it wasn't. It's just I finished my degree 8 years ago and then focused the last 8 years on learning what I needed to learn and researching what I wanted to research about and then developing like an idea of what I want to do, which turns out to be ADD and digestive health as well. So I've got different areas that I like to focus on. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, you can, yeah. I went to uni pretty much, got the piece of paper, and it was great that I learned. I loved the fact that I learned the biochemistry of it, but I didn't agree. You're right. They do say one diet fits all, and it's not true.
Which is not right. And you heard that straight from the mouth of a qualified Bachelor of Nutrition and Physiology.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me, Katie. I really enjoyed this show. I was, I'm glad that we kind of changed it around a little bit from what we first thought it would be, because I honestly think that this is a problem that's becoming more and more prevalent, and it needs to be, well, I should say it's a problem. It's just a thing, really. It's not a problem that needs
it's
to be.
It's not a problem. It's, yeah, it's given just more, a lack of understanding.
Exactly. People just need to understand it a little bit better, because it's just something that we need to learn from, really.
Yep.
Perfect. Yep. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Katie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No problem. Thank you so much.